We present the News Quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
And welcome to the News Quiz. We start with an excerpt from the BBC News website, read by Kathy Clugston.
It's well known that erectile dysfunction is more common among older soldiers, which would explain the hefty bill for retired service members.
Our thanks to Howard Grosvenor and indeed everyone else who sent that in. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Andy Hamilton and Kerry Godleyman. And opposite them, on my left, Hugo Rifkind and Desiree Birch. Andy, what spelt double trouble for the government this week?
In the last 7 days, Theresa May has suffered two parliamentary defeats, which is a comparatively good week for her, actually. No, the way things are going, that is, you know, I think this government is going to have to learn to manage its expectations. I think they're rapidly becoming the Crystal Palace of politics. But I think they were very worried that the Brexit legislation will get neutered at the committee stages, so they decided to neuter the committees. And they did this by rigging the committee that chooses who gets to go on the committees. And I think they're probably their ideal vision of a parliamentary committee would be, I don't know, five MPs, two Tory, two DUP, and possibly a gay Liberal for the DUP to punch if they get bored. It's ironic that Brexit was supposedly to protect parliamentary sovereignty, and parliamentary sovereignty is getting dismantled, and it is shocking and it is outrageous, and I should be outraged, and in normal circumstances I would be outraged if it wasn't for the fact that I am now totally outraged out. No, seriously, the events of the last 2 years have drained all the outrage out of me. You know, if I woke up tomorrow and the headline said that the government had decided that the NHS should be run by Uber, I'd just shrug and go, meh, you know, because it's exhausting, isn't it? It's very hard on the arms. And so, you know, I've definitely got a bad case now of outrage fatigue. In fact, it's got to the point now where Michael Gove comes on my telly. I can't even be bothered to throw up now.
How about you, Kerry? Have you been gripped?
No. I mean, similar to Andy, it is difficult to keep the rage going. When I get emails about bees, I'm like, oh, forget it. I haven't got any energy left for bees. Yeah. I know they're in trouble, but
they'll have to fend for themselves.
They will. They're weighed down my list of priorities at the moment. So, yeah, this is the DUP thing, because the DUP have gone against the government on a couple of things, though, haven't they? Because the Tories only paid the £1 billion package, and if they want to upgrade to the Infinity package, they're going to have to pay another £15 million a month, aren't they?
You don't get much for a billion now, do you?
No, it doesn't. You've only done so far.
No.
It's the problem with a lot of politics at the moment is it's really scary and really important and really confusing and really boring all at once. But it really is. It's like the committee thing. The Tories justify it by saying, so they've got a majority in Parliament, but they didn't have a majority in the committees. So they had to make a majority in the committees so that things didn't need to keep going back to Parliament, where they could have got them through because they had a majority. So they wanted to do the stuff in the committees so they didn't have to keep whipping the DUP. But they spent a lot of money to whip the DUP, and the DUP would probably get whipped for free because they're those sorts of people. But the whole point of this was that the government's saying, look, it doesn't make any difference because if we go back to Parliament, we'll get everything through anyway because we've got a majority. And yet they do this at the exact same time that they put something to Parliament and don't get it through because they don't have a majority. So if you understand that, you're doing better than me. And it's my job.
And have Labour had a good week, do you think?
The Labour position on most things seems to be moving around. It's starting to look awfully like their position is whatever they think might win them an election. And, I still don't really understand what Jeremy Corbyn's views are on Brexit or on the single market.
It's non-binary, is what it is. That's the word.
There's pressure building, isn't there, for a second referendum. I'm just not sure if people can take a second referendum. I mean, you know, in principle, I'm in favour of staying inside the EU, but emotionally, I don't think I could handle a second referendum.
It's good for the tiny pencil people. They're the big winners in everything.
And because we still had that system, you see, in America, they don't believe in pencils for voting.
Whereas we've got Bookies, Argos, elections.
That's right.
IKEA.
Of course.
Argos doesn't have them anymore. Argos has got iPads these days.
Yeah. So wait, you go to a store to vote?
These are the latest goings-on at the House of Commons, where Labour inflicted a double defeat on the Conservatives over tuition fees and NHS pay, a defeat which will have no legislative effect whatsoever. One can't help feeling that a technical defeat on a non-binding issue is exactly what the crowds were chanting for when Jeremy Corbyn visited Glastonbury. The defeats were the result of a clever Labour stratagem, three words that, like video cassette recorder, make sense together but still feel odd to utter after such a long period of disuse. The Conservatives were defeated after the DUP indicated they were willing to walk through the division lobbies with Labour, saying, "You want us to march through somewhere that'll make some other people unhappy? We're your guys." The DUP's move to block a tuition fees rise is thought to be an attempt to appeal to young people who the DUP believe are our future, as opposed to our past, which the DUP believe is only about 6,000 years old. Also this week, the government passed legislation guaranteeing the Conservatives an effective majority on all Commons select committees. As with all stories about select committees, very much news that we've all been waiting for. When I say select, you say committee. Select! That is satire. That is... Oh, anyone else want some? I thought not. Crikey. 2 points to Andy. It's always 2 points.
Make it one.
1 point to Andy. You lost points for detail and attitude. Hugo, which force of nature has visited a disaster zone?
This would be Boris Johnson in the Caribbean. Because the Hurricane Irma has struck the Caribbean and particularly the British Virgin Islands. And for some reason, when the government thinks of massive disasters ravaging virgins, they think of Boris Johnson. And he's had a difficult few months since the election has poor Boris, but now he's had the sort of enormous good fortune that a terrible disaster has happened somewhere he hasn't insulted yet. So he's got on a plane and he's gone there. And it's nice that he's got something to do. It's obviously not nice for the British Virgin Islands, where it's terrible, but it's nice that he's got something to do, because Boris has been quite sad. And there's generally a feeling, it was reported this week, that in the Conservative Party, that the Prime Minister is worried because Boris is not getting the attention he feels he deserves, and he might do something foolish, imagine. Because he's sad, because he thinks people are all cross with him, he thinks he's being made the scapegoat for Brexit. He's cross that people think he lied because he says he didn't lie, it was the bus that lied and he wasn't driving it, it's nothing to do with him. So it's like he's being made a scapegoat for this terrible disaster. But so he's there, he's helping out. Richard Branson, of course, has a place in the British Virgin Islands, which has been pretty much destroyed. So he's saying they've got to rebuild. They've got no power, no water, no broadband. And if he's on Virgin, it's going to take him ages. So, yeah, Boris Johnson has gone out there to the Caribbean to fix all this. So good luck, world.
Desiree, were you pleased to see Boris out and about?
Is anyone ever pleased to see Boris out and about? I mean, it made his hairstyle make sense that there was a hurricane on, finally. That was just a match made.
You know he's going to turn up and try and cheer everyone up and say, oh, I've got a few duty-free bits, you know, on the flight over. He's a massive Toblerone. You could live in the box. Never has the phrase "a fart in a hurricane" been more apt. We have weird names for our hurricane. You know, Irma is war goddess. That's what it means.
Is that right?
Really? Yeah.
Well, that's quite good. See, I was thinking, because we had our first named storm, didn't we?
Aileen.
Aileen. Yeah, I mean, I don't think you should name storms, because you get attached to them.
Always like old lady names, like Aileen, Gladys, and Beryl. They don't seem threatening. You just think, well, they're coming around, I'll just get some bingo dabbers. Yeah. A couple of doilies in, we'll have a laugh.
This week, Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson went to Anguilla and the British Virgin Islands to visit the victims of Hurricane Irma. The islands may have hoped for a multi-million dollar aid package, but will settle for the consolation of a blonde man in a hard hat poking at the wreckage of a house with a stick and occasionally exclaiming, "Tricky chap, Johnny Hurricane." Hurricane Irma, of course, so-called in keeping with the convention that all hurricanes are named after unpaid parliamentary research assistants that Boris Johnson's boffed. Boris's trip coincides with an extra £25 million of funding announced by Theresa May, which she presumably had to tell the Foreign Secretary was not holiday spending money. Hurricane Irma also destroyed Richard Branson's private island of Necker, a tragedy for Branson, who has lost a small fortune just when he was seconds away from handing it over in taxes. Branson waited out the storm in his concrete wine cellar. If the phrase concrete wine cellar makes it difficult to sympathise, let me assure you that the story was very different for his champagne attic. In which the hurricane smashed every single bottle, inadvertently launching 24 ships. 2 points to Hugo. Desiree, what happened in... What happened?
This is Hillary Clinton's new memoir that is out. I think the rejected title was It Takes a Scorched Village, because she just burned everybody in this book. I think on November 9th, she woke up, right? She squeezed the bladder bag inside of the box wine to make sure it was empty. She pulled out her little Hello Kitty journal and just started throwing shade all over the place, like a palm tree in the breeze, you know? And so she goes in this book, she like, you know, she's blamed Bernie for not conceding early enough. She blamed Obama for not calling out the Russian scandal. She blamed Comey. She blamed pantsuits, just, you know, for not being... And in this year, it was play suit. She blamed email in general, because it's never as satisfying as receiving an actual letter, let's be honest. She did blame herself at some point and just basically went like, you know, I guess I'm just not likable. And then was like, how you like me now? I mean, like, honestly, it's amazing to watch this all unfurl. Because I feel like at a certain point, as a woman, you get to an age where you just want to be heard. Like, you don't care anymore. You just want to be heard. And you're the, like, grandma that's sitting there talking about how all the men wanted you, but you chose this one, you know, Billy with the saxophone. He was supposed to be the good one. And, like, it's like she's just in that place where she's burning it. And it's amazing to watch. So, yeah, it's a really interesting time. Like, I voted for her, obviously, because I'm a young person with thoughts in my brain. And, I mean, she's always done this, and she's doing it now. She's cashing in. She's like, I lost this thing, but I'm getting my money, you know? And, like, respect to their whole family, because they're good at doing that, you know? And here's her whole book, What Happened, Pay Me to Find Out. And I kind of love her for it.
She found herself up against a completely different kind of political opponent. I remember watching her saying, when your opponent goes low, you go high. But in the real world, if your opponent goes low and you go high, that's how you get punched in the bollocks. That's not, you know, and I did feel for her. And we were trying to work out what she could have done. And I wonder whether she could have not been a Clinton. If, say, she had booted Bill out before the campaign...
Oh, my gosh, youth vote were to skyrocket, populist vote, like, she's one of us now! Just her with, like, you know, Miller High Life, you know, on the lawn. Like, she could have cinched this thing.
I mean, I think being a man would also really have helped her.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
she has blamed that. She blamed everything. She blamed it on the sunshine, the moonlight, the good time. She blamed it on the boogie.
The person who came out of it quite well, I thought, it's not a sentence I'm going to say every day, was George W. Bush, because apparently after Trump delivered that inauguration speech, he turned to the other ex-presidents and said, that was some weird shit.
Yes. This is the launch of Hillary Clinton's new book, a dark, thrilling read about a down-on-their-luck hero who won't take no for an answer. Unless the question is, are you going to be the first female president of the United States? If readers want an example of why Hillary's honesty and humility continue to appeal, they need look no further than this unflinchingly self-critical account of how Bernie Sanders lost the Democrats the 2016 election. The book is a sequel to her previous autobiography, Living History, and should really be titled, Not After All Living Quite As Much History As One Might Have Reasonably Hoped. Actually, the book is called What Happened, after the only words Hillary could say for the first 8 months while rocking catatonically. Some people have suggested writing a book wasn't appropriate for Clinton, who, in the manner of unwanted middle-aged women everywhere, should simply fade gracefully into the background, maybe popping up at the odd christening to curse a baby or haunt a well. Two points to Desiree. And at the end of round one, the scores are Andy and Kerry have three, but out in front are Hugo and Desiree with four. We start round two with a sign spotted in Halesworth, Sussex.
The next matinee film screening in support of Halesworth Dementia Trust will be La La Land.
Our thanks to John Underwood for sending us that. You cruel man. Kerry, what X is getting in your face?
This is the launch of the new iPhone 10. So it's called the iPhone 10 because that's how many organs you have to sell to buy one. It's got Face ID and you just hold it up to your face and then that unlocks it, which is extremely exciting. Awful if you're having an affair because your partner only has to hold it over your face when you're asleep and they can just read all your old texts. And also, what if you're having an ugly day and it won't let you in? Like, no, you're a minger, go and put some makeup on. When they did the demonstration, the software chief went to demonstrate it in the launch and it didn't work and he had to go to his backup phone. But that, you know, that's showbiz for you. One day your face opens doors and the next day you're at family. And also the new development as well, it's got emojis that move. And I like emojis. I think, you know, that I'm amazed we still chat at all. Like, you can say so much with an aubergine. Oh. Or the little poo with eyes.
If you send someone an aubergine and a poo with eyes, what are you... What? What I'm saying is, Kerry, what did you mean?
Is the aubergine phallic?
Oh, absolutely.
OK, I was really late to the party with that. I was just sending emojis all over town.
Yeah, boasting about how many aubergines you'd had last night.
It won't work for me because many a time at airports I've not been able to get past a camera and I've been told by security staff that they think the problem is that the computer doesn't recognise my face as a face. Worse still, someone steals your phone, they've got to take your head as well.
This is the launch of Apple's new iPhone X, or for those of you who don't understand Roman numerals, the One Phone 10. The phone's key facial recognition feature failed during its launch event when the phone saw the face of a roll neck wearing goatee sporting Apple employee and thought, well, it could be any of them. What we don't know is what facial recognition software will mean for those of us who look radically different at various stages of the daily wine cycle. So, if I want to use my wife's phone, I'll need to dress like her and put on the makeup. Way ahead of you. We've talked a lot about Apple. In the interests of commercial balance, we should point out that Androids are still crap. 2 points. Hugo, who doesn't give a damn?
Oh, this is a great story. The Hoover Dam... It's famously difficult to swim across because, as well as being a dam, it's also a Hoover. but last week, this drunk Welshman swam across the dam, first person ever to do it alive. He's called Aaron Hughes, and he was on a stag, obviously. Of course, you're on a stag. The quote from me said, "We got there, and it was absolutely roasting, and I thought for myself, I'm going in for a dip." Which kind of sounds reasonable, except it's like there's massive sort of churning turbines, and there's a dam, for God's sake. In the past, anyone who's tried to do this has died, but he did not die. He swam across to the other side, and he was fined, like a few hundred dollars. But he said, I don't have any regrets. I even have a tattoo saying no regrets. That's the kind of person I am.
250 people have died, and he was very lucky because the turbines, most of them weren't turned on. I just hope that on this stag week, he wasn't the groom, because that would be a really mixed signal to give your bride-to-be, wouldn't it? Hello, darling, I'm really looking forward to marrying you, but I thought I'd go about as geographically as far as possible away from you and then attempt something that's tantamount to suicide. Love you.
Well, this guy, I love the quote about the, like, you know, no regrets. See, I'm the kind of guy who gets a tattoo that says no regrets. And I was like, a douche? Because that is a super lame tattoo. But I do love this guy because I feel like the British are at their best when they're wasted. Like seriously, right? Like, that was an incredible thing to do. Totally worth the fine. Nobody else has ever done it. He was just super baller about it. And I feel like, you know, here I find that all the British people I know are, like, extra emotive and huggy and nice and complimentary when they're drunk. And now they're out there breaking world records.
I love his tattoo. I love no regrets. I think that's I think everyone should have their personality traits tattooed on their right. I'd have a bit needy, sometimes indecisive. I make a lovely quiche. This bloke's tattoo does actually spell K-N-O-W regrets.
No, he's a bird watcher. It says no egrets.
This is the tale of Welshman Aaron Hughes, who, while taking part in a stag do, became the first man ever to survive swimming the Hoover Dam between the US states of Nevada and Arizona. The North Wales Daily Post reports his friends have called him a legend. For the rest... For the rest of us, alas, he is all too real. Hughes did say, "Once I started swimming, I knew I had to get to the other side. So, brighter than he first appears..." For my money, when it comes to stag do's, if you haven't taken time out to marvel at the wonder of hydroelectric power, you might as well have stayed at home. Still, it goes to prove the old saying, what happens in Vegas makes the North Wales Daily Post. He says he was just having a laugh, but I'm not so sure. After all, which of us hasn't looked around at the faces of our best male friends only to realise that the watery tendrils of death would be preferable to another second in their awful, awful company? Two points to Hugo. Desiree, have a listen to this.
There's a hole in my bucket, dear Liza, dear Liza. There's a hole in my bucket, dear Liza, a hole. Then mend it, dear Henry, dear Henry, dear Henry. Then mend it, dear Henry, dear Henry, mend it.
Desiree, welcome to Britain.
Yes.
That song gets more exciting.
I don't think it can.
Oh, no, they're really up the jeopardy. Honestly, you wouldn't believe it. It's almost impossible to fix, Ninian. Desiree, who's crossed an item off their bucket list?
Yeah, gosh. So this is what is Great Yarmouth Charter Academy, I believe is the name of the school. But they basically had sent out to their students and the parents new rules for the school. Basically, they said for students who become ill in class, they will be passed a bucket to throw up into rather than being released to the toilets to go throw up. Because they basically said all these students are faking illnesses to get out of class. And the principal even said something like, we want to teach them, when you go to work, you know, you don't fake illnesses to get out of work. And I was like, what job do you have? Like, that's the first thing you learn. Start teaching these kids early. But also, all students, saying you have your period totally works. Nobody wants to deal with it. And if you're a boy and you say you have your period and someone says you can't have a period, then you can be like, you don't know my gender. And then you've got a discrimination suit on your hands. So, like, period, totally use that. Like, vomit's not going to work for you anymore.
No, I'll tell you what, though, you would not want to be bucket monitor.
It does a adds a new meaning to bucket list, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know how sarky teachers are? Do you think if kids do throw up, they'll be like, it's your own lunch you're wasting?
This is a school in Norfolk who have now retracted their plans to stop pupils from faking illness by providing them with buckets in the classroom to be sick into. This all happened at Great Yarmouth Charter Academy, which used to be Great Yarmouth High School. And if you've ever wondered what the difference between a high school and an academy is, it turns out it's a bucket. Sad news for the Norfolk Bucket Company, who ended the day 6,000 points down on the Tokyo Stock Exchange. The school was previously rated as inadequate by Ofsted, but is now a happy and productive place, full of hard-working children and an almost overpowering smell of disinfectant. In fairness, only one in five of kids who say they feel sick are actually ill. The others just feel sick because they're next to a bucket full of vomit. 2 points to Desiree. Before we reveal the all-important final scores, has anybody got a cutting that they'd like to share? Andy.
Sebastian Wilberforce sent in this advert for seasonal backpackers in a New Zealand newspaper. Want to try something really different? How about packing bull semen orders? You need to have excellent hand-eye coordination and great attention to detail. Full training will be given.
Kerry.
Anna Gilling emailed this headline from the Washington Post. Uber's search for a female CEO has been narrowed down to 3 men.
Hugo. This is sent in by Emma Back, Kate Price and M.W. Douglas, and it's an apology from the Hampshire Chronicle. And it reads, during an election profile article on the Winchester UKIP candidate Martin Lyon last week, there was a typographical error in the words county councillor, producing what looked like a crude remark. The error attracted some vulgar attention on social media, and we apologise to Mr. Lyon for any embarrassment caused.
Thank you, and now let's take a look at the final score. Andy and Kerry have 7, but this week's winners are Hugo and Desiree with 8. Before we leave you, here's a headline from the International Business Times, sent in by Joe Isham.
A new study finds that Uranus opens every few hours to release solar wind.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Andy Hamilton, Kerry Godleman, Hugo Ripkind and Desiree Birch. In the chair was Miles Jupp and the news was read by me, Cathy Clugston. The chair script was written by Madeline Brettingham, Nick Doody and James Kettle, with additional material by Jenny LaVille and Robin Morgan. The producer was Joe Nunnery and it was a BBC Studios production.